All right, Thanksgiving is done, and the countdown begins. Do we have, 27, 28 shopping days remaining to get those presents wrapped and under the tree and make sure that we're there? In fact, to remind us, we've already survived Black Friday. Tomorrow, we will encounter Cyber Monday, and of course, while they want us to believe that these are the only deals of the season, the deals will just keep on rolling as they present to us things that we absolutely have to have, or things that our family members absolutely have to have. It is the season of giving. Presents exchanged, charities highlighted, generosity promoted. And if it weren't for Paul in Acts chapter 20, and Luke recording it for us, we would never have known that Jesus said, "It is more blessed to give than to receive." Now, something tells me Jesus wasn't talking about the holiday season when that happened, or Black Friday, or Cyber Monday. That's something that tells me that is actually the context of the passage, incidentally enough. And yet, it seems that this is a good time of year, as we're already in the mindset of giving and, from a child's perspective, receiving, to take a moment to consider Jesus' words, to contemplate what that means. You know, we're not surprised that we don't find this phrase from Jesus in the Gospels. In fact, John tells us in John 21 that there were many other deeds and teachings, words that Jesus did that are not recorded for us. John goes so far as to say that if everything that Jesus did and taught were recorded for us, he supposed the whole world could not contain the books that would contain those messages, those accounts. That's John 21 and verse 25. And yet, apparently, the church was familiar with these words. So much so that Paul could allude to them as he meets here in Acts chapter 20 with the Ephesian elders in Miletus. But just what is the blessing of giving? How can it be true that there is a greater blessing in giving than even in receiving? Well, as we contemplate this together, I want us to do it in three sections. First, we're going to look at the purpose of prosperity, which I think is something that we all need to give our attention to, especially in modern America. And then I want us to look at the paradox of the passage, because at the end of this, what Paul is discussing is really beyond just dollars and cents. But at the end of our time, as we round out this message together, I want us to look at a guide to being a cheerful giver. And we're going to see that from some great examples of giving to whom Paul alludes in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Consider with me the purpose of prosperity. You know, the Bible has a lot to say about our money. We're not to seek money by dishonest gain. We're to work to provide for ourselves and for our family. If a man will not work, neither should he eat, Paul said. And the one who fails to do so, that is to provide for his family, has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Some translations even said infidel. So we're talking about a spiritual correlation here. This isn't just something that we can, you know, stick over in the secular box or material box and claim that that has no bearing upon our faith. Paul makes it clear that there is a correlation between our faithfulness to God and what we're doing in providing for ourselves and for our own. It reminds me of 1 Timothy chapter 6, which of course has a lot to say about our perspective on riches. It's verse 10 of this chapter in which Paul declares that the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil and that many people have given themselves over to it. But we come down in verse 17 of 1 Timothy 6, and Paul warns those or exhorts those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. And then he says that those who are rich are to do good, they're to be rich in good works, They're to be generous and ready to share. You see what I'm doing? I'm talking about rich people as though I'm not one of them. We are to be good and rich in good works. Hey, you know, whatever's going on outside right now, weather-wise, doesn't affect us in here. Isn't that amazing? And even though it's dark outside, it's very well lit. In fact, especially up here, it's very well lit so that we can all see comfortably. And you can hear me, even though for some of you, I'm a good distance away from you. And there are some people who aren't even in this room right now who are able to participate and to join in with our worship service this evening. And all of that signifies to me that we are rich people, that we are a blessed people. And so when Paul is talking to the rich, he's not talking about the Elon Musks of the world. He's not merely talking about them. He's not only talking about the Jeff Bezoses and the Tim Cooks and the Bill Gates and, you know, insert celebrity and millionaire or billionaire here, but instead he's talking to every one of us. That we are to do good, that we're to be rich in good works, that we're to be generous and ready to share. Notice the purpose of prosperity. We're to use what God has given us in ways that will honor God and bring Him glory. That's the purpose. Paul appealed to that in our text here in Acts chapter 20. I have proven to you all, he says to these elders. So that, if I can sort of give the sense of what Paul is saying, he's saying, I didn't want anybody to have any reason to doubt anything that I've done in terms of integrity and financial dealings. I didn't want there to be any mistake as though anyone could misunderstand and think that I've done what I've done for personal financial gain. And so, rather than being supported by all of the churches, sure, there were some churches like the church in Philippi. There were some even individuals who would help to support financially the work of Paul. But Paul says, I've labored with my hands. And in so doing, I have lived above reproach among you all. And he says, in all things I have shown you that by working hard in this way, Acts 20, 35, we must help the weak. And remember the words of Jesus, it is more blessed to give than to receive. The purpose of prosperity? Is it to see how much I can get for myself? Or based on these passages, just these two, Acts 20, 35 and 1 Timothy 6, 17 to 19, aren't they teaching that the purpose of this is so I can do good? So I can help another? So I can glorify God using the financial blessings that He's given? Consider, of course, the example or the story that Jesus tells in Luke chapter 12, the parable of the rich fool. Now, as Jesus launches into this story, He says in verse 15, take care and be on your guard against all covetousness. By the way, Paul in Colossians 3, verse 5 says that covetousness is idolatry. Remember this morning as we began worship, we said we become like the things that we worship. So if it's all about material gain or the almighty dollar, if it's all about, you know, the kind of car that I drive or, you know, how many figures are on my check each week or each month or however much my bank account is or my retirement account, I mean, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong with any of these things, but how am I using them? Jesus reminds us in Luke 12, 15 that one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. That's an interesting reminder when, I don't know about you, do you get these emails? I don't even know if I subscribe to these. But boy, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, all the emails started hitting about all these deals, you know, and it's crazy, 20% off, you've got to have this. One's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Snag a good deal? Hey, that's great. Good for you. But it's not all about that thing, right? He told them a parable, verse 16, saying, the land of a rich man produced plentifully, and he thought to himself, what shall I do? Pause right there a minute. This is a made-up story, right? Jesus is telling this to illustrate the point. He's already given us the purpose, and that's back up in verse 15. Take care, be on guard against all covetousness, because your life doesn't just consist of the stuff that you have. But here's this character in this story that Jesus is weaving. And he asks a question actually that we all will ask with regard to our material possessions. What am I going to do with this stuff? And here's a man who is in an interesting situation because his crops are yielding forth plentifully. It's not merely that he has just enough to get by. It's not just that he has maybe a normal amount to harvest. He seems to have in excess of what he has previously had. In fact, if I keep reading, he says, I have nowhere to store all these crops. What am I going to do with this? Well, I know what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods, and I'll say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for your many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. This is beyond just a retirement plan, right? This is more than just, okay, I'm storing up for those days when perhaps I'm not going to be physically able to work any longer or whatever. This is more than just being financially smart. This is someone who wants to be lazy and who is very selfish about it all. If you notice the personal pronouns throughout all of this, what am I going to do? I have nowhere to store my crops. I will do this. I'll tear down my barns. I'll store my grain and my goods, and I'll say to my soul, here's a man who's all about himself. And he has all these plans, and he doesn't realize that those plans will never come to fruition. God said to him, verse 20, fool. You know, the Lord doesn't just throw that word around. Someone who's not walking in wisdom, someone who is rejecting wisdom, you fool. This night, your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, well, now whose are they going to be? And Jesus says, so is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Listen, please don't misunderstand me. I'm not trying to say that gift giving during the holiday season is the equivalent of what we're reading here in Luke chapter 12. But I am cautioning us in a time when everything is commercialized and everybody's trying to sell us something and trying to get us to realize how what we currently have is insufficient and what we really need is something else. Don't we need to learn the discipline of being generous? Don't we need a realization, or maybe it's just me, that I need to be rich toward God? We do understand, of course, that to give is to sacrifice something of myself toward another person. When we give to others, we do lose something. It could mean not being able to build the bigger barn. Could mean no longer even having a use for a bigger barn. But Jesus says that there is something about giving that brings about blessedness. That leads us to somewhat of a paradox of the passage, at least to the way that we might initially think of it. There's joy and there's blessing in giving, in spite of the fact that giving is going to cost me something, that I have to sacrifice, that when I give to someone else, I'm doing that. And notice the context of Acts chapter 20. Paul says, I've labored so that I can support the weak. So the kind of giving that Paul is alluding to as he invokes the statement of Jesus here is not a giving like, I'm going to give you a gift and then you're going to give me a gift. It's, I'm giving to someone else without any notion that that is going to be in any way repaid or returned. I don't have an expectation that that is going to be returned. I'm doing this to help another. I'm sacrificing for another. It's intriguing to me that Paul is the one who alludes to this statement of Jesus. He was a man with little. In fact, next Sunday morning, Lord willing, we're going to look from Philippians chapter 4, how Paul says, I know how to do without. I know how to be hungry. Paul certainly had been. But in a way, the fact that Paul would say that attests to the validity of the statement. And think about the fact that Jesus is the one who originally made the statement. Jesus, the one who said, foxes have holes and birds have nests, but the Son of Man doesn't have anywhere to lay his head. And yet it's he who said, there's a greater blessing in giving than in receiving. You know, it doesn't take much to do a lot of good for another person. You don't have to be loaded to bless someone in a memorable way, to make a big impact. How are we really blessed in giving? Maybe we should say this. This passage doesn't teach that it's wrong to receive. In fact, those who are going to fulfill what it is that Jesus says in Acts 20:35 necessitates that there is someone on the other end who is going to receive, right? And I dare say every one of us in this room has been blessed because someone gave something to us. Stop for just a minute and think about, what's the single most impactful or memorable thing that another person did for you? Do you have that memory in your mind? Was there a sacrificial spirit about someone, a selflessness, as they poured into you in some way, and you know that there was some sacrifice of themselves, and yet what a blessing to receive. It isn't wrong to receive. There's a blessing in receiving gifts, but according to Jesus, there's a greater blessing in giving, in contributing to another. The indication, of course, is that this is a gift that is able to be given as a result of hard work. Paul says, Acts 20:35, I've shown you that by working hard, we can help those who are in some way deficient, perhaps in strength physically, perhaps in faith spiritually, perhaps in some other way. But as Jesus says, it is more blessed to give than to receive. I've worked hard, and now I'm able to bless another. The gift is undoubtedly motivated by love, and therefore generosity. The gain of giving is even greater than what you gave up. Selfishness blinds us to this blessing. Selfishness says, I can't let go of this. I don't have enough to give to another. Sure, there are moments when the budgets are tight. I think about the first few years when Emily and I got married. We've had this fancy budget spreadsheet, and we put in all the numbers. Over here on one side was income, and over here on the other side was the money that was going out. And down at the bottom was a number that was in red instead of black. I thought, we got to do something about this. I thought we were living kind of humbly back then. The Lord provided somehow. I think about the generosity of God's people during a time like that for a couple who's trying to get started and get their feet on the ground. Selfishness, though, blinds us of the blessing of giving by saying that we're giving up something that we'll never get back. That if I dare to give to another, perhaps I will never be blessed with sufficient supply again to have enough. Listen to what Jesus says in Luke 6:38. Give and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over will be put into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. You know what I think about when I read Luke 6:38, this is weird. I think about trash night. About this time tomorrow night, we're going to be going through the house and pulling all the trash out of the trash cans. And because Thanksgiving has just happened and we've hosted some folks at our house, we already have a little more garbage in the can out in the garage right now than we typically do. And so I know this time, about this time tomorrow night, I'm going to be pressing down and it's going to be running over. And I'm going to be shaking to see how much I can possibly fit into that tiny receptacle so that I can then, with all of my effort, roll it to the end of the driveway so come Tuesday morning, the trash truck can come and collect that garbage. That's weird, isn't it? But that's what I think about. I'm trying to fit every single bit of that in there that I possibly can. Look at how much the Lord wants to bless us. That He could pour into us so that, to borrow from the words of the psalmist, our cups run over. I read a poem some time ago that said, I'm drinking from my saucer because my cup has overflowed. Well, how about that? Pressed down, shaken together, running over. It's a false notion to think that if I use the blessings that God has given me to bless another, then somehow I'm tapping into resources that eventually are going to run dry. No, that's false. God will bless as we use what we have to bless others. So how can I grow in giving? Can I invite your attention as we conclude to 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9? And let's look at a guide to growing in our giving. 2 Corinthians chapters 8 and 9. I want to begin by asking you a question. What kind of giver are you? As I turn my attention to 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7, we read this often before our weekly collection on the Lord's Day morning. 2 Corinthians 9, 7, each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. This verse seems to indicate that there are three types of givers and that I am one of the three. There are those who give reluctantly. I'll do this, but I'd really rather not. I'll give, but I really wish that I had that money back. Or I wish that instead of giving this money here, I think in the context we're talking about the weekly collection of the saints as a part of our worship, I'm going to do this, but really it'd be nice if I could spend this money in some other fashion instead. A reluctant giver. And then there are those who give under compulsion. It's kind of like when you're checking out at the store and before you swipe your card or give them the cash, they say, would you like to give to this charity or that charity? And are you like me? It catches me off guard every time. I wasn't expecting them to ask me about that. I'm just trying to check out and get on my way. I don't even know. You know, I feel like I need to vet the charity for a moment. I don't know much about this. What are we doing? Whatever. Give under compulsion. There are some who feel as though their contributions in the context, I want to be faithful to the context, that their contributions to the Lord, to the Lord's work, it's something they have to do and they see it merely as an obligation, and so they give under compulsion. Am I a reluctant giver? Am I a giver who gives under compulsion? Or am I a cheerful giver? You know John 3:16 says God loves everybody. But isn't it interesting that 2 Corinthians 9:7 says God loves a cheerful giver? I guess there's a special place in the heart of God for someone who gives with joy. More than that, I think the person who gives with joy is actually showing us the heart of God. consider that as we back up in 2 Corinthians to chapter 8 for just a moment. How do I grow in giving? Well, here's a guide to giving from the Macedonians. You know, this is the time of year there's a lot of gift guides out there. My kids look forward to the Amazon catalog. Can you believe it? Amazon sends us a catalog. And that's way better than just scrolling through the internet, because now we can flip page after page and they circle the things they want. And when it's all done, they've circled something on like every page. And there's like 200 pages in this catalog, right? You've seen these things. Well, instead of a gift guide, here's a guide to giving. And it begins in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1. Paul says, I want you to know, brothers, he's writing to the church at Corinth, of course, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. Okay, I want to appeal to you to notice the example of the congregations in this region of the world. Berea, Thessalonica, Philippi are places of note because of the great congregations that were established there in this general region of Macedonia. And Paul says, I want to appeal to you, Corinthians, with regard to the example of these Macedonian Christians. For, verse 2, in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty have overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. Are you seeing there's this weird paradox thing going on all over again in this text? Here are people who are described as impoverished. In fact, extremely impoverished. They're afflicted. No, they are severely afflicted. And yet, they have joy. No, they have an abundance of joy. They're generous. No, they're overflowing in a wealth of generosity. Do you think that this group of Christians has something to teach you and me about learning to be a better giver? How to be someone who can come to know the blessing to which Jesus points in Acts 20:35 when he says, it is more blessed to give than to receive. What's the secret? Verse 3 says, they gave according to their means, as I can testify, and even beyond their means, of their own accord, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. They wanted to do this, and by Paul's estimation, they gave even more than what they should have. He says, beyond their means. They were sacrificing because they really wanted. They were begging to be a part of the favor of working for the relief of the saints. There are four things on this list, as I see it, that the Macedonian Christians teach me about how to be a better giver. And it begins with them giving themselves to the Lord. Verse 5 of chapter 8 says, this, not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord, and then by the will of God to us. I think there's a lot in this statement to consider what Paul is saying. Here were people whose generosity comes out of, first and foremost, their commitment to the Lord. But you see, what they've done is they've tapped in to the source, to the one from whom all blessings flow. And because they know that God will continually meet their needs, and they know that God is presently meeting their needs, they are now generous, even in the midst of difficulty, in reaching out to relieve the needs of other brothers and sisters in other parts of the New Testament world. They first gave themselves. Sometimes my closed hand toward others is a result of a breakdown in my relationship with God. I don't fully appreciate God as the giver of every good and perfect gift, James 1:17. Or maybe I want to store up all that God has given, and I don't realize that when I give to others, God will ensure that I'm taken care of as well. In the second place, the Macedonians teach us, this time if we drop all the way down to verse 12, that they were responsible for the things that they had and stewarding the things that they had. I think this will make more sense when we read the verse and explain it a little bit. It says, if the readiness is there, it's acceptable according to what a person has and not according to what he does not have. In the context, Paul is exhorting the church at Corinth to make good on the commitment that they had made in the past with regard to sending money to relieve a need in the churches of Judea. This goes all the way back, I believe, to 1 Corinthians chapter 16, when he says, I've given orders to the churches of Galatia, and now I'm going to give orders to you on the first day of the week. I want everybody to set something aside, to lay by in store, to give to the church treasury, so to speak, so that when I come, we don't have to scramble for the funds. It'll all be right there. I can take what you've allocated for this benevolent work, and I can make sure that that gets where it needs to go. So Paul says in 2 Corinthians, listen, I want you to be like the Macedonians and look at their wonderful example. And it all began with their commitment to the Lord. And now as Paul sort of makes his way and very tactfully to the application to these brethren, he tells them, listen, I want you to genuinely from your heart give something like the Macedonians have done. But I want you to know you're only responsible for stewarding the things that you have. And so in verse 12, he says, it's acceptable according to what you have and not according to what you do not have. Can I be as generous as brother or sister so-and-so is? The answer to that question is, if I'm faithfully stewarding what I have, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They're working with different resources than I'm working with. The one talent man was not disappointing to his master simply because he was a one talent man. He was disappointing to his master, and he was an unfaithful servant because he didn't do anything with that one talent that he was given. But he was responsible only for that one talent. He wasn't responsible for the five talents that the first man was given, right? And in the same way, I'm responsible for what I have. I'm to steward that faithfully. And the churches in Macedonia, and as Paul makes application to the church in Corinth, we learn that. And then, in verses 13 through 15 of chapter 8, their giving worked in concert with other givers. This is how this works. I don't have to give as much as brother or sister so-and-so because all of us are working together ultimately for the same end. We're working to serve Jesus together. We want to be generous together. I do not mean, verse 13, that others should be eased and you burdened, but that as a matter of fairness, your abundance at the present time should supply their need, so that their abundance may supply your need, that there may be fairness. It is written, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack. Well, this isn't some kind of commune where nobody has, you know, his or her own personal possessions, but instead Paul's saying, listen, you can cheerfully and in compassion give to relieve the needs of these individuals over here, and then one day when the tables are turned, they will be able, no doubt, to help you out in your time of need. But we're all working with this together. Isn't it amazing what can be accomplished when God's people work together? It's pretty amazing what God can do through just one of us. You know, one person is an individual. But boy, you hear, you know, statements that are up here made that this much money was sent over here for this or for that from time to time, you know, as the elders make us aware of these things. It's amazing. Number four, their giving ultimately modeled the gospel of Christ. I want to begin in chapter 9, verses 13 to 15. Paul is saying, by their approval of this service, they will glorify God because of your submission that comes from your confession of the gospel of Christ and the generosity of your contribution for them and for all others. while they long for you and pray for you because of the surpassing grace of God upon you. Thanks be to God for his inexpressible gift. Notice how this is tied for Paul, ultimately back to the message of the gospel. We're going to see that explicitly in the other passage. But for now, Paul is saying, when the recipients of your generosity receive that which you send to them, they will in return glorify God. And they'll be reminded of the grace of God, even the grace of God in giving his son Jesus. Back up with me to chapter 8, verse 9, finally this evening, and look at what he says. You know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor. What comes to your mind when you read this? That Jesus was rich. Well, how could we even begin to consider the riches that Jesus willingly sacrificed? We're talking about a sacrifice that precedes the cross. As cruel, as terrible, as painful as the cross was. And Paul says, Jesus was obedient to death, even the death of the cross. That is something in and of itself. But 2 Corinthians chapter 8 says, there was great sacrifice. And Paul says in Philippians 2 as well. But there was great sacrifice on the part of Jesus, even in just coming to earth. You know that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor. Now think about the poverty in which Jesus existed when he was here. Why did he do that? So that you, by his poverty, might become rich. Well, now we're beginning to understand that this richness that Jesus offers to us is not financial prosperity per se, but is ultimately a spiritual richness. The churches in Macedonia and the model to which Paul alludes for the church at Corinth ultimately is that of Jesus himself. And it's in the example of Jesus that we come to learn the blessing of giving. Consider the words of Albert Barnes. It's just kind of a for what it's worth kind of thing, but I like the way he put it. It's Jesus' giving spirit on which he himself acted when he came to give pardon to the guilty, comfort to the disconsolate and the mourner, peace to the anxious sinner, sight to the blind, hearing to the deaf, life to the dead, and heaven to the guilty and the lost. Acting on this, he gave his own tears to weep over human sorrows and human guilt. He gave his own labor and toils to instruct and save man. He gave his own life a sacrifice for sin on the cross. Barnes goes on to say, loving to give, he, Jesus, has freely given us all things. Loving to give, he delights in the same character in his followers and seeks that they who have wealth and strength and influence should be willing to give all to save the world. Tonight, what kind of giver am I? What kind of giver are you? The Lord loves a cheerful giver. That's true as it relates to the sacrifice that we give every week in worship, as we give a financial gift, putting it, as we say, in the offering basket come Sunday. But as I apply the principle that was stated in Acts 20 and verse 35, I see that it applies more than just the Sunday morning collection of the saints. Paul says he'd worked hard and labored with his hands to be above reproach and for the express purpose of giving to those who are weak, and in so doing, living out the truth of Jesus that he stated, it is more blessed to give than to receive. In this season of giving, As we think a lot about exchanging gifts, perhaps we can use this as a reminder that we are blessed all year long, and to whom much is given, well, of that person much is required. Jesus, and as a manifestation of the grace of God, is to motivate my giving. He gave himself for me. Will I be willing to give to another in their hour of need? Will I have a generous spirit, knowing that the one who's given me the blessings that I have is giving from a storehouse that never runs out? And this evening, as we think about the invitation of the Lord, Jesus has given himself for me. Am I willing to begin as the Macedonians did by giving myself to him? If you're not a Christian tonight, we'd love to help you. In fact, if you're ready to submit to the Lord and to die with him this very evening, to become a New Testament Christian and have your sins washed away by his blood, we'd be honored to assist you tonight. If you need the prayers of this group of people, you need strength, you need forgiveness from God as a Christian, we'd be honored to stop everything and to pour our hearts before God on your behalf tonight. If you have a need, come forward while we stand.